The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Very happy to welcome back to the show Ben Eamons, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at PIMCO. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen.
So this is, as we wrap out 2013 and head towards 2014, Ben, it does seem that when we're trying to gauge where currencies go, where a sovereign bond market goes, the central banks are still in the driver's seat.
They very much are, indeed. I think last week was kind of extraordinary in that sense that there were lots of signals out of Europe and out of, including the Fed minutes, speaking a lot about options they still have to continue this highly experimental policy. So yeah, presumably you can say that central banks remain in the driver's seat and will continue to have influence on asset markets is a view that we've put out there now for some time, particularly on the front end of the yield curve, that they will continue to exert this message that they see rates for longer, low for longer.
Well, and let's start right here then in the United States if we're going to go take a little trip around the world, because the Fed minutes, a lot of discussion about the various topics that were touched on in it, but certainly a sense that the short end is safe. You don't exactly know when the Fed's going to taper or how quickly, but the commitment, the forward guidance to keep the key rate at zero till at least mid-2015, possibly longer, certainly didn't hurt in the auction yesterday, did it?
No, it did not. I think that the Fed is very much geared towards that sort of policy. That they have different tools, and I think that tool in particular, the forward guidance, is their focus. And it shows in the minutes that they're discussing how they could potentially strengthen it again. And presumably that's what will happen if they do decide to slow down the bond purchases, that they may strengthen the guidance further, in addition to how they look at data, of course. So yeah, the Federal Reserve put out lots of different things they could still do, messaging to markets that they're very much not exhausted here at the zero bound.
It's interesting that two-year note auction got a bid-to-cover ratio of 3.54, how many bids relative to how many actually sold. That was the most since April and above the average of the past 10 sales. From time to time, there's a lot of hand-wringing about what global investors, foreign investors are going to do when it comes to the U.S. government bond market. What do you see there?
Yeah, so there was, of course, a bit of a change during the sort of May-August period. But then by September, the data shows from the tick data that was recently released that China and Japan again came back to the treasury market. And that's the concept of that there are limited alternatives when it comes to that bond market liquidity. And so our treasury markets is liquid, is vast. And although the Fed is very active there, there are limited other alternatives. You can replace something with nothing, as they say. Right? And therefore, these foreign creditors, they may pull away from this, the treasury market at times for different reasons, but they also come back. So I think that for the time being, it doesn't look like they are now rapidly pulling back from the treasury market.
Bank of Japan, the yen up today after minutes from the Bank of Japan's October meeting showed that officials saw risks to the outlook for the economy. What about the BOJ and their plan to reach 2%?
Yeah, the speech by Kuroda over Monday overnight was again notable because he emphasized that they will continue to reach that objective. And that's important because that means that they will just simply not stop or consider stopping in between or so. So that's one certainty you have. And he specified that they think they can reach their objective by late 2014 or early 2015. So it gives markets a bit of a timeline. Whether they will achieve that objective, we'll see. But at least they're committed to it till that time, at least. And that's, I think, another sort of piece of information for financial markets, that looking at a central bank that remains active, doesn't do anything else but just continue the same policy, is a certainty, and therefore markets like that. So,
well, we hear so much quickly, Ben, about, it's one thing to buy bonds, but it's another thing to actually make the reforms in the economy, opening them up maybe more towards foreign workers, maybe opening the services sector more.
Yeah, sure. The reform comes, one, from the government itself, And it takes time to implement that. We see that in Europe, and you see that also in Japan, even here. It takes a little bit of time to do that. The central bank cannot really influence that process other than saying that the government should step up that effort.
So, Ben, to the European Central Bank. Remember, was it July, year before last, when the Mario Draghi, the head of the ECB, got out what people called his bazooka? His last announcement, some said, was more like a pea shooter. What are the ECB's options? What are their challenges now?
Yeah, they're challenged by what they call fragmentation. So the credit markets in Europe are still very fragmented. There's not a good credit flow in Europe, and that's partly as a result of the crisis and slow growth, and therefore also very low inflation that kept falling. And because it's falling now to 0.7% was the recent reading this Friday, I believe, is the next number that comes out. They're very focused on, obviously, to not end up eventually in deflation. I think there's one reason why these commentaries are coming out of the ECB of explaining, like, well, we cut interest rates, but we can do more things in order to maintain price stability, as they say. So the ECB is challenged by this fragmentation in the credit markets. Now, I have to say, though, their focus actually, what they really like to see is that the banking union comes together, and that will resolve the credit fragmentation.
But they've taken so long to get there, Ben. They talk and they talk and they talk. They set a deadline. It doesn't happen. Are they ever? Because presumably one of the stories here, one of the comments that's made is that the Germans don't want to get the fiscal union in place. In fact, the ECB doesn't want to get the banking union in place, I should say, banking, not fiscal, until they're sure that more of the bad banks are cleaned up in these countries, because the ECB doesn't want to foot the bill.
True. They certainly want to not provide a subsidy to the banking system that way by saying, okay, we're going to just simply continue to give out all this liquidity ongoing, and then banks would, the weak banks will remain in place in a way that it's actually subsidizing them. There's a view within the ECB, but not everybody, I think, feels that way. They do are very strong, though, about the banking union itself, that they feel that's the right thing for Europe to go forward. But again, their objective is to try to maintain a harmonized system where credit flows naturally across all countries.
Well, if it hangs on the banking union, does that mean more of the same until they finally get their act together in Europe and put this banking union together, really make it a reality instead of just talking about it? Is that what it's going to take?
I think on the political side, that there certainly is a pressure to move forward with. Now they have the single supervisory mechanism in place, which is what the ECB will look after, that they also put in place this single resolution mechanism. And that they're getting towards that point that they are in agreement with each other. Once that is done, they can actually put that together and have a banking union, so to speak. So I do think there's commitment there. On the political side, and that's where the ECB doesn't want to get involved, obviously, in that discussion on the political side. And that's the reason why they're just kind of in a holding pattern here until that happens.
So we don't talk enough about Australia on this show, and it is definitely on your radar screen. In fact, our story today on the Bloomberg Terminal, the Aussie dollar slid to a five-year low against New Zealand's Kiwi before the Australian Reserve Bank deputy governor speaks tomorrow amid speculation his central bank will curb strength in the currency.
Last week there was a speech out by actually the governor, Stevens, who is, the headline there was that they're open-minded to foreign exchange intervention. And then you had last night the other governor, Lowe, who said, like, well, there's a high threshold, but it's an option. So it's the same kind of stories with other central banks, right? This is an option they could use. And perhaps they will move towards this intervention. We'll have to see that, but there are signals about it. But they have certainly emphasized over the last, at least last year or so, that they feel that their currency is too strong, right? Too overvalued. An argument made by several other central banks too, like in New Zealand, but also in some of the emerging markets, have said that before, currency too strong, or Switzerland. And so this idea here is to have the currency somewhat weakened further and until that is at a level where they feel it's comfortable.
Well, there's always a debate about currency market intervention if it lasts for more than a few minutes, right? Can they really curb the strength in their currency? Will it take a fundamental change in the economy? Will it take capital controls, which they're probably not likely to put on? How much difference can Australia make by intervening in the currency market?
Yeah, if you're doing an intervention, as you mentioned, it's a short-term effect, and it's positioning that then leads to this sort of change of the currency value. But indeed, it's a policy that's geared towards, like, we want to make a change in the economy. So in the case of Australia, they came from a relatively high growth rate and have been experiencing some slowdown as a result of slowdown in China, because it's very related. And as a result, they've also cut interest rates. So one of the things they may do first, though, is that they would lower interest rates a little further, which by itself should somewhat weaken the currency, too, because that's always the relationship, right, the interest rate differential. But on the other hand, it's also that you have to put in place then this policy to be committed to weaken the currency. And that takes a lot. I agree with that.
Ben Eamons, thank you so very much for joining us, Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager at PIMCO.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.